Hey, we are in the Faith of the Flawed series, so we're going through Hebrews chapter 11. And Hebrews 11 is kind of taking us through a overview kind of the Old Testament of some of these widely known characters and names that you've maybe heard about your whole life. And so we're looking at each one of these characters that comes up in Hebrews chapter 11. And I see some of y'all flipping to Hebrews chapter 11. I didn't tell you to do that. We're going to be there in like 32 minutes, people. So you can go ahead of me all you want, but we're going to be in Genesis. All right, so turn to Genesis rather than Hebrews chapter 11. I promise we will get to Hebrews chapter 11, but the way I like to preach, and you've probably figured this out by now, I like to tell like a 30-minute story before you know what my point is. And so I'm going to tell you a 30-minute story, and then you're going to see why Hebrews chapter 11, verse 22 makes any bit of sense, okay? It's a hard verse to understand. It's talking about Joseph, and so today we're going to be talking about Joseph. And so yesterday I thought, hey, maybe I should go out and get a coat of many colors, and I can wear that as I preach. And it's July, and there were all these rainbow shirts on sale. It was unbelievable. I'm like, why are all these rainbow shirts on sale? Oh, it's July. Yeah, July. Yeah. And so I decided not to get a rainbow shirt because they had all sorts of stuff on them. That was a lot of fun. And so hopefully this shirt isn't too bright for you. I couldn't find a rainbow colored shirt that was appropriate. So here we are. So we are in Genesis chapter 37. That's where we're going to be. And so the story of Joseph takes up the last like 14 chapters of Genesis. And so we're not going to go through all of it, but we're pretty much going to go through all of it. I've got a whole bunch of slides today. And so maybe you've been thinking to yourself, as we've been going over some of the people in Genesis, maybe you've been thinking, man, it'd be great if God spoke to me. Because as we've been going through the people in Genesis, man, Noah had conversations with God. And then we get to Abraham, and Abraham talks with God a whole bunch of times. Right? Why am I on my second page? It'd be great if I was on my first page. That'd be better. And so he talks to God a whole bunch of times in chapter 12 and 15 and 17 and 18 and 22. You're just going through his passage. Man, he gets to talk to God a lot. I might be able to have faith if God came and talked to me like seven times. And then we get to Abraham's son named Isaac, and Isaac talks with God in chapter 26. His son named Jacob, he wrestles with God. He has a little match with him one night in Genesis 32. And maybe you're thinking, man, if I could have God talk to me, maybe I could have faith like these guys, because God would be telling me what to do. And that'd be a lot easier than in the world that I live in, where God isn't audibly speaking to me. Well, if you've had any of those thoughts, you're in luck, because the author of Hebrews has you covered, because the guy we're going to look at today, Joseph, as far as we know, in his 14 chapters, he has a bunch of hard things happen to him. God doesn't audibly speak to him at all. He has a story that's a lot more like yours and mine, where God isn't invading my life and coming down from heaven, speaking to me, wrestling me in the desert, right? That's not happening for Joseph. And so we're going to go through Joseph's story, and Joseph's story is all about sight. And so we've been using this word sight to describe what faith is, that faith is the assurance or the conviction of things not seen. So somebody who has faith can see something that their physical eyes aren't able to see. And so as we go through this story, you're going to be amazed, and I promise you, I have not doctored any of these verses, how much the word sight comes up over and over for Joseph and his brothers and Potiphar and Pharaoh, and all these people in his story are seeing things. And so whenever we come to one of these things, I've got a sight spotlight, and we're just going to zoom in on some of these words, and I want you to see what people are seeing in Joseph's story. And when we can kind of compare what everybody else is seeing compared with what Joseph is seeing, I think it's beautiful and amazing, and we have some awesome things to learn from God's word just by zooming in on this word sight. Now, Joseph's story actually starts with a guy named Jacob. Jacob is Abraham's grandson. And so remember Jacob and Esau, there's that whole story. And Jacob ends up with four wives, and he has 12 sons, and he has at least one daughter. Her name is Dinah. But he has two wives that are sisters, Leah and Rachel. And so a bunch of sons for Leah and a couple sons for Rachel. And then these two servant women of Leah's servant has a couple sons, and Rachel's servant, Bilhah, has a couple sons. But Rachel is Jacob's most loved wife. If you remember that story, that's the one that he like fell in love with and worked 7 years for Rachel, and then Rachel's father Laban kind of sneaks Leah in at the wedding night, and it's a whole messy story. But the point of the story is that Jacob loves Rachel. And so therefore, if you really love Rachel and you're kind of okay with your other wives, which is not how he should have acted, he shouldn't have had other wives, but you shouldn't be loving your children more, but lucky enough for Joseph, he is the loved son. Jacob loves Joseph, and what a stroke of luck for Joseph. Out of 12 sons, he is the most loved son. So, but let's see what the other brothers think about this. I'm in chapter 37, verse 4, and I'm going to warn you, you don't have to go through the Bible with me, because we're going to go through like all the chapters. I've got like 20 slides just on these chapters, and you don't have to follow along. You can, but I bet you can't, so don't. So in 37, verse 4, what do the brothers see? But when his brothers saw, and we're going to spotlight that word saw, so go ahead, give me a spotlight. When his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all his brothers, they hated him, and they could not speak peacefully to him. So right away, we're invited in to see this word saw. His brothers are seeing something. With their physical eyes, they're like, hey, Joseph is more loved than us. We're older, right? We've been here longer. We're doing all the work for our father, and yet our father loves Joseph. This is not fair. So his brothers are off in a far country, and his father sends his son, his loved son, Joseph, who wears the coat of many colors, and his brothers must have boring drab clothes, and he gets to wear this bright colored shirt, and so he sends them off to his brothers to go see how they're doing, because they're off taking their sheep to a far off land. And so he sends Joseph and his brothers, and he eventually finds his brothers, and his brothers see him coming. Well, in 37, verse 18, what do his brothers see? They saw him from afar, and before he came near to them, they conspired against him to kill him. So his brothers see him coming, and his brothers are not just your average, ordinary brothers. I mean, I had an older brother, and it was lots of fun sometimes. And maybe you had an older brother as well. And so much fun. And so, but it's not like an ordinary older brother. These older brothers are murderers. Two of them, the second and third oldest ones, one time, just kind of for fun, because this guy kind of humiliated their sister and did some nasty things to their sister, they killed a whole town. A town. A town, I said. These guys killed a whole town. And now his brothers hate Joseph because he's more loved. He's coming to them from afar, and they conspire against him. They conspire to kill him. And now one of the brothers steps in and says, hey, let's not kill him. Maybe let's just scare him a little bit. And so they decide to put him in a pit. And when that brother's away, they pull a little nasty card, and they sell Joseph into slavery. And the other brother comes back, and where's Joseph? Where is he? Well, we sold him to some slave traders. You what? Well, yeah, we sold him to some slave traders. And so Joseph, now being the loved son of his father, is now separated from his father. What? How far has the family of Abraham fallen? Abraham was promised that his seed was going to bless the whole world. Now his seed is selling the other seeds into slavery. In just a couple generations, right? Like Abraham's family has fallen, and this is actually, as we remember, if his brothers are murderers, this is actually a pretty good outcome for Joseph. This is about as good as it gets, falling into the hands of your brothers. Your dad doesn't know what's going on, right? And so being sold into slavery actually isn't that bad of a deal. And so Joseph gets taken down 400 miles from Canaan to the land of Egypt. That's where the Midianite traders take him. And the narrator steps in as Joseph gets sold into Potiphar's house. The narrator steps in and tells us a little bit of what's going on here. The Lord was with Joseph, and he became a successful man, and he was in the house of his Egyptian master. So he gets sold into Potiphar's house, and the narrator tells us that this is actually the Lord was with him. That even in this confusing circumstance, and what horrible misfortune that he's been sold into slavery. But the narrator steps in, and God is with him, and God is blessing him. And so Joseph rises up in Potiphar's household. He becomes the most in command outside of Potiphar. And he acts righteously. He's a diligent worker. He's a great leader. But Joseph's stroke of luck, right? He was lucky, now he was misfortunate. Now he's lucky again that he's been elevated to the top of Potiphar's house. Well, it doesn't last very long because somebody sees him. Who sees him? Well, his master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord caused all that he did to succeed in his hands. So Joseph found favor in his sight and attended him, and he made him the overseer of his house and put him in charge of all that he had. Okay, so Potiphar sees him, but somebody else sees him too. What's the next verse we got? And after a time, his master's wife, Potiphar's wife, cast her eyes on Joseph and said, "Come lie with me." And so Joseph must be a strapping young man. He's in his early 20s at this point. He was 17 kind of when he got sold into slavery, so maybe he's 20 years old. And so he's in charge of his master's house, and Potiphar's wife lays eyes on him, and he must be a strapping man and wants him to come lay with her. And so Joseph shows his unbelievable integrity here. He says, "No, like I'm not even going to spend time with you, lady." That's how the passage talks about it. "I'm not even going to spend time with you. I can't even be around you because I can't disgrace my owner. I can't disgrace Potiphar. I can't disgrace you, and I can't disgrace me. And ultimately, I can't disgrace God." Like, what crazy integrity. And so he would just ignore her and spend as much time away from her as possible. He's in this place of authority, and he's not going to use it for his own joy or her own joy. He's going to do it for his master. But one day comes along, and Potiphar's wife backs Joseph into a corner of which both of them are not going to be able to get out of. She says to him, "Come lie with me." And he says, "No, I'm not going to do it." And she rips off his clothes, and he decides, "I've got one option here, or two options. I can stay and be killed by my master, or I can leave and maybe be killed by my master." And so he flees the house. And Potiphar comes home, and she is bad-talking him. "Hey, look, your servant came in and tried to lie with me, and here are his clothes." And that's obviously not what happened. And Potiphar grows enraged at Joseph and throws him into prison. Man, what a horrible misfortune. Man, what is going on in Joseph's life? He has been acting diligently. He's been acting with moral character, and yet he's being treated so poorly. And so he is thrown into prison. So he was thrown into a pit, cast into slavery, raised up, and now he's thrown into prison. But the narrator steps in once again in 39 verse 7. I probably went backwards, didn't I? I meant 39 verse 21. Good job. "But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him steadfast love and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison." So we're on a roller coaster ride with Joseph, obviously, right? He's up and down, and he's thrown into slavery and rises up, and then gets thrown back into prison and rises up. And so the narrator steps in and tells us, what's going on here? The Lord was with Joseph. I mean, with physical eyes, you'd probably ascribe this to, hey, Joseph is just a really good worker. Joseph is diligent. Joseph is trustworthy. Joseph is a great speaker and a good leader. Those are all probably true about Joseph. But the narrator steps in and tells us what's actually going on. What does heaven see? What does God see when he looks at Joseph? Well, God is blessing Joseph. With Joseph's eyes and with Potiphar's eyes, you could see a whole number of things. And maybe Joseph is starting to connect the dots in his life. Maybe Joseph is starting to look backwards in his life and see, man, I was misfortunate, but then God blessed me. And I was unfortunate, and God blessed me. Maybe Joseph is starting to connect some dots. I don't know. And so once again, Joseph gets put in charge, and he's in charge of the prison of the guard. And it looks like there might be a way out, right? There might be a way out of this forsaken prison. And it comes in the form of dreams. There are two men who share this prison with Joseph. They are the Pharaoh's baker and Pharaoh's cupbearer, the man who would test the wine and put it into his hand. These two guys are also in the prison. And one night, they have some spooky dreams, and it's freaking them out. And Joseph is kind of in charge. And they look a little sad one day. Joseph goes up to them, "Hey, what's going on? Why is your face downcast? What's going on?" And they say, "Hey, we had these dreams, and it's really freaking us out." And so Joseph says, what does Joseph say? Let's see this. "We have had dreams, and no one knows how to interpret them." And Joseph said to them, "Do not interpretations belong to God? Please tell them to me." So Joseph, what is he seeing? He sees confusion. He says, well, I might be confused, but God doesn't seem to be confused in my circumstances. I may be confused about the dreams, but God is not confused. Tell me the dreams, and God will interpret them. And so he gives these interpretations to the baker and the cupbearer. He says, baker, you're going to die in 3 days. Cupbearer, you're going to be restored to your position in 3 days. And when you do, remember me. Tell Pharaoh about me, that I am here unjustly. I was sold by my brothers, and I was accused by my master's wife, and none of it is worthy. I'm not guilty. Tell Pharaoh about me. And so, what a stroke of luck. The dream comes true, and the cupbearer is forced back into his position. He's right next to Pharaoh, and he could get him out. And the cupbearer forgets about Joseph. Man, what horrible misfortune. What a horrible misfortune. He had a chance to get out. And it's gone. The cupbearer has forgotten. And years go by, and Joseph is seemingly rotting in a prison that he does not deserve to be in. And years go by, and one day Pharaoh has a dream. He has several dreams that are similar. And he's telling everybody, he said, I want some interpretations of these dreams because they're not going away. Like, I can't stop thinking about these dreams. Somebody find me somebody who can interpret dreams. And all of a sudden, the cupbearer thinks, oh, dreams? I remember a guy who can interpret dreams. There's this guy named Joseph. He's a Hebrew, and he's in your prison. Call him, and maybe Joseph will be able to interpret your dreams. And Joseph comes to Pharaoh, and in 40 verse 8, nope, that's not one. 41 verse 16, I've got a lot of slides today. Joseph answered Pharaoh, it is not in me. God will give Pharaoh a favorable answer. So what is Joseph seeing here? Well, Joseph sees that interpretations, again, belong to God, that his life is in God's hand. Even though he's rotting in prison, Joseph seems to understand that God is in control. Now, the answers to these dreams that Joseph gives to Pharaoh ultimately, and that's a long story short, ultimately lead to Joseph being put second in command of Egypt, because there's a famine coming. And you're going to need, there's a famine coming after 7 years of good harvesting. There's a famine coming, and it's going to be 7 years long, and it's going to be horrible. And Joseph says, hey, you're going to need to put someone in command that can navigate these 7 good years in order that you can get by the 7 bad years. You're going to need to think through this. And Pharaoh says, well, you're the only one with answers around here. I'm going to put you in charge. So Joseph is now second in command of Egypt, and you're saying to yourself, what a stroke of luck. Right? Look at this. He went from rags to riches. Look at it. He's just by his own intuition and intelligence, and man, he must be a great leader. What a stroke of luck. Now he's second in command of Egypt, just in time for the great famine. What a stroke of luck. And so Joseph, there he is in Egypt. He's in charge, and it's a worldwide famine. And Joseph is around 30 years old at this point in time, and worldwide famine, and it affects even his brothers, even his family up in Canaan. Oh man, what horrible misfortune. Man, the brothers are starving. They need food somewhere. And so Jacob says to his sons, hey, if we can't get food here, we're gonna die. I've heard there's food in Egypt because there's this guy there that can see the future. Go down to Egypt and get us some food. And so his brothers make the 400-mile trek from Canaan down to Egypt. And Joseph sees his brothers, and they come up to his table maybe, and they're asking for food, and he begins to question them harshly. He begins to interrogate them and ask them about their family, and hey, you guys are a bunch of brothers. Do you have any other brothers? Do you have any other brothers? Anyone died maybe? Anyone sold into slavery maybe? Do you have a younger brother too? And they're really getting interrogated, and they're thinking to themselves, oh man, what horrible misfortune. We came all the way here, we came all the way to Egypt, and now we're being verbally attacked by this guy. What horrible misfortune. And so Joseph, knowing the truth, knowing the truth of the brother's story, knows that they have a younger brother named Benjamin. Benjamin is not with them right now. Why? Because Benjamin is also a brother of Rachel. Now he is the beloved son. And so Jacob is not letting Benjamin go down to Egypt. Last time he let his youngest son, his most beloved son, go with those brothers, well, he came back dead, right? He wasn't there anymore. And so I'm not sending Benjamin. You guys go down to Egypt. Benjamin's staying with me. Joseph knows this and says, hey, you guys go back to Canaan, get your brother Benjamin and bring him back here. Then I'll give you some food. And so Joseph is setting up the circumstances for his brothers, and his brothers are thinking to themselves, oh man, what an unfortunate circumstance. And the story at this point in time, we need to be careful here, shifts from Joseph to his brothers. We've been looking at, what is Joseph seeing? What is the narrator saying about reality here, that God is blessing Joseph? And what does Pharaoh, what does Potiphar see? What does cupbearer see? All these things. It shifts from Joseph to his brothers now. Now we're going to watch, how do his brothers respond to these unfortunate circumstances? And so as they're being questioned, 42:21 says this, "Then they said to one another, 'In truth, we are guilty concerning our brother, in that we saw the distress of his soul when he begged and we did not listen. This is why this distress has come upon us.'" So they're just talking to themselves. They don't know that Joseph can understand them right now. And they're saying to themselves, he's questioning us. He's being mean to us. It's all because of what we did. They look backwards. It's our fault. It must be because of that. This is why this distress has come upon us. We get to see a glimpse into the brothers' hearts. What are they blaming? And what are they ascribing this misfortune to? It's because of what we did. This is why this distress has come upon us. It has nothing to do with God. It has nothing to do with righteousness. It has nothing to do with the spiritual realm. Nothing at all. Just because of what we did. And so while going back to get Benjamin, Simeon is now in prison. They take the second oldest brother and they keep him in prison, Joseph does. Send the other 9 brothers back to go get Benjamin. And on their way back, they open their sacks and they thought they had given the money to Joseph for all their food. And they look in their sacks and, uh-oh, there's still money. What do they think? And as one of them opened his sack to give his donkey fodder at the lodging place, he saw his money in the mouth of his sack. And he said to his brother, "My money has been put back in my sack. Here it is in the mouth of my sack." At once their hearts failed them, and they turned trembling to one another, saying, "What is this that God has done to us?" What horrible misfortune, they think to themselves. This is bad luck. This is not good news. And lo and behold, all the brothers still have their money in their sack. So now when they go back with Benjamin in order to get Simeon, their other brother, now they're going to have to explain all the money that's been stolen. And they think this is not good news. So they go back to their father Jacob and they explain their horrible situation, all the horrible bad luck they've had. And they explain it all to them. They're like, "Hey, we've got to take Benjamin back. I know it's bad luck, but we've got to take Benjamin back to get Simeon, or else Simeon is going to die in prison." So Jacob relents and says, "Okay, you can take Benjamin. We've got to go get Simeon, and we've got to go get more food. And so take Benjamin. That's all we can do." And when they get there, they get invited. Joseph isn't there yet, and Joseph's servants invite the brothers into the meal as directed by Joseph. They come into Joseph's house at Joseph's table, and what a stroke of luck, right? They're now at this nice table. They're being welcomed into his house, but what are they thinking? What do they think about this kind gesture? And the men were afraid to them because as they were brought to Joseph's house, and they said, "It is because of the money which was replaced in our sacks the first time that we were brought in, so that he may assault us and it may fall upon us to make us servants and seize our donkeys." Right? This is not good news. This is horrible news. He's going to kill us now. We're going to be attacked. Well, how does Joseph perceive them as he enters the room? Next verse. "Then Joseph hurried out as he looks at his brothers, and he sees Benjamin for the first time in however many years. He sees Benjamin, for his compassion grew warm for his brother, and he sought a place to weep, and he entered his chamber and wept there." And so they sit down for the meal, and he composes himself, and he comes back in, and it's kind of weird that the brothers are all set down. Their seating places are in birth order, and they're confused at how does this guy know our birth order? How does he know where to place us? And they think to themselves, on the next slide, please. "Then they tore their clothes, and every man loaded his donkey, and they returned to the city." That's not the right verse. I might have given somebody the wrong verse. 43:33. Oh, somebody. Josh made a mistake. Nice. 43. This is finally Josh's fault, not mine. This is great. 43:33. "They look around at each other," the brothers do, "in amazement." They're like, "Why are we sitting in birth order? Like, this is amazing. Like, how did he know this?" And they're very confused. And so their eyes are seeing confusion. And so they enjoy the meal, and then Joseph says, okay, you can have Simeon. You guys go back to your hometown, and we'll see you later. But little do they know that Joseph has instructed that his silver cup be put in the mouth of Benjamin's sack. Uh-oh. And so as they're leaving, they go out a little ways, and the officials come, and they check all their bags, and they find Joseph's silver cup in Benjamin's bag. And then they tear their clothes. Right, 44:13, it says this, and they tore their clothes, and every man loaded his donkey, and they returned to the city. And so what are they seeing? They're seeing, man, what horrible misfortune has come upon us. Now the silver cup is in Benjamin's sack. Benjamin's going to be put in prison, and we're going to have to go back and tell our father that Benjamin is not coming back. This is bad news. And they tear their clothes. And they plead with Joseph not to take Benjamin. Chapter 44, verse 31. As soon as he, saying to Joseph, as soon as our father sees that the boy is not with us, he will die. Jacob will die. And your servants will bring down the gray hairs of your servant, our father, with sorrow to Sheol. They're only seeing with their physical eyes what's going to happen to their father. They're not really seeing what's going on here. And Joseph cannot take it anymore, and he says, stop, I want everybody, all the Egyptians, to leave the room. And he looks at his brothers, and he looks around the table, and you can only imagine what is going through his mind, and he tells them, I am Joseph. I know I have an Egyptian name, and I look different, and it's been many years, but I am your brother who sold you into slavery. What an emotional moment this must have been. Calls out, I am Joseph, and he has compassion for them and love for them. And then in 45, verse 3, we see how his brothers respond. Joseph said, I'm Joseph. Is my father still alive? But his brothers could not answer, for they were dismayed at his presence. They didn't know what to do. Their eyes were confused. They looked at Joseph, and I guess it's Joseph, but we don't even know what to say. We sold you into slavery, and now you're in charge of the known world. What do you say to that? How do you respond? Well, apparently you don't respond. And in 45, verses 5 through 8, we see how Joseph sees this situation. I love this. 45, 5 to 8. And now, do not be distressed, Joseph says, or angry with yourselves, because you sold me here. For God sent me before you to preserve life. For the famine has been in the land these 2 years, and there are yet 5 years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvest. We got another one, another slide? And God sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant on earth and to keep alive for you many survivors. So it was not you who sent me here, but God. He has made me a father to Pharaoh and lord of all his house and ruler over all the land of Egypt. What does Joseph see when he looks back at the ups and downs of his life? What does he see? Does he see his own fortitude? Does he see his own ingenuity? Does he see his own luck? No, he says, God sent me here. You meant evil against me, but God, it was meaning all those things, even Potiphar's wife, even the cupbearer forgetting, everything, all those things, God has prepared me for this moment. God sent me ahead of you to save your lives. Well, I mean, what crazy faith Joseph is looking with. Now, what is faith? Faith is how Joseph is viewing the situation. We talked a couple weeks ago how faith looks forward to what God's going to do next in Noah's life. But faith right here also looks backwards. Faith can look backwards and connect the dots. You see, Joseph, I mean, it would be naive of us to think that Joseph has not connected the dots in his life. You don't think, you don't think that Joseph is sitting in his prison cell and he has not connected the dots? Like, he knows that he is unfortunate. He knows. Like, you would be in there in the prison wallowing in pity. I would be there wallowing in pity. Man, my brother sold me into slavery. I've done everything right, and all these bad things keep happening to me. You don't think Joseph knows that? Joseph knows all the misfortune. Joseph knows all the unfortunate things. He has connected the dots, let me assure you. But Joseph, here's the thing. Joseph has learned to view his life with eyes of faith. Why? Because there are actually more dots along the path that Joseph is able to connect. We can easily connect a couple dots, right? man, this bad thing happened in my life and this bad thing happened, and we can hit all those dots. But faith is able to look back and see all the other dots where God was there too. All the other dots where God has brought me to this place in my life for this purpose right now. Faith can see that. You know, human eyes, we can connect some dots, but faith eyes can connect all the dots. Faith's eyes can actually see what God has been doing this whole time. And what we need to see in this story is that Joseph and his brothers have actually been on parallel tracks. They've both been having tons of unfortunate circumstances happening to them. They both are outside of their control. Right? They're actually on parallel tracks, but they're handling it completely differently. His brothers are only looking at the circumstances with human eyes. His brothers can only see what they've done and can only see confusion, and they can only see what's going to happen to their father, that he's going to die. They can only see those things. They can only connect the physical dots. But Joseph, in his life, on his parallel track of confusion and pain and all these things have been happening to him, Joseph is able to connect all the dots. He has learned to view his life with eyes of faith. I don't think Joseph the whole way along has viewed his life with eyes of faith, but I think Joseph is learning. Joseph has learned in all of his uncomfortable circumstances and all of his pain that God is actually there. I think the narrator, many times that we saw in the story, the narrator is saving Joseph from talking. The narrator is saying God is actually blessing him, because if we actually saw what Joseph is thinking at this moment in time, I bet it's probably like you and I. I'll bet you he's in prison wallowing. Man, this is horrible. I cannot get off this bad luck train. I'll bet you that's what he's doing. But Joseph, over time, is learning to view his life with eyes of faith. He's learning to see that God is actually in all the unfortunate circumstances and all the fortunate circumstances. He's learning that. And this is seen so beautifully at the end of the brothers' story. Now, Jacob has died in 50, verse 15. And the brothers say this: when Joseph's brothers saw that their father was dead, they said, "It may be that Joseph will hate us and pay us back for all the evil that we did to him, and that he's going to kill us." Right? Jacob's dead now, so now Joseph's going to kill us. They look at the circumstances and they can only connect the physical dots. They're still scared of themselves. They're still scared of even viewing it with spiritual eyes. They're scared of Joseph. They don't trust God. They can only view it with eyes of physical eyes. But what does Joseph see in the situation? And this is maybe the most beautiful verse in Joseph's whole story. 50 verse 20. "As for you," Joseph says, "you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good, to bring about that many people should be kept alive as they are today." So Joseph, while his brothers are viewing it with physical eyes, Joseph has learned to view his story with eyes of faith. It seemed unfortunate, but God had a plan through it all. It's one thing to be able to connect some of the dots in your life. It's another thing to be able to connect all the dots in your life and see all the times that God has been moving and preparing and readying and protecting and blessing. Seeing all those dots along the way, that is eyes of faith, and Joseph learned that. And so we come to Hebrews chapter 11, verse 22. How Hebrews remembers Joseph. What does it think about Joseph? "By faith, Joseph, at the end of his life, made mention of the Exodus of the Israelites and gave directions concerning his bones." Now, maybe you're confused, and that's why we didn't start with Hebrews 11, 22, okay? We've seen the story of Joseph's life. We've seen how he has learned to view his life with eyes of faith. He has looked backwards in his life and learned, it was not my brothers that sent me to Egypt. It was not Potiphar that put me in prison. It was not anything else, but it was the hand of God in my life bringing me to this place. So Joseph, at the very end of his life, gets to look forward. And how does Joseph look forward? Well, we're going to go back to Genesis. The last chapter, this is right after Joseph just said, "You meant evil against me, God meant it for good." The next thing he says is 50:24. And Joseph says to his brothers, "I'm about to die, but God will visit you and bring you up out of this land to the land he swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob." So the last thing he says is, "I'm going to die, and you're going to be here for a while, but bring up my bones, go back to Canaan. You're going to make it back to Canaan." So here's the question. Why does the author of Hebrews say that Joseph said this by faith? Why did it take faith to say this? Is faith seeing a vision? No. Does it take faith to see the future if God shows it to you? No. So what's going on? How does it take faith to see this? How is it by faith that Joseph said, you're going to go back to Canaan? You're going to take my bones back to Canaan? Why is it by faith? Well, here's maybe what's happening. Maybe God shows Joseph the next 400 years. The next 400 years of bondage and pain and unfortunate circumstances and horrible events happening to Joseph's ancestor, descendants. He sees all the pain that's coming, all the confusion, all the horrible slavery that's coming. I don't know if he sees the end. I don't know if he sees that they're actually going to make it out, because it says by faith he says this. By faith he says you're going to make it back to Canaan. Maybe Joseph, seeing all the pain that's coming, starts to connect some dots and connects all the dots. Maybe he connects the dots that there's pain and confusion and uncertainty coming. And I'll bet you Joseph remembers two things. Maybe he remembers a story that his great-grandfather Abraham said. In 1513, God says this to Abraham. Then the Lord said, know for certain that your offspring will be sojourners in a land that is not theirs and will be servants there. And they will be afflicted for 400 years, but I will bring judgment on the nation they serve, and afterward they shall come out with great possessions. Maybe Joseph remembers that God promised that God is going to bring his people out of slavery. Maybe he remembered that. But I'll bet you for sure, Joseph is able to look back at his life. He's able to connect all the dots that God has been moving in all the confusing times, all the painful times. God has been preparing him for this moment to save life. So when he looks ahead in the future and sees pain and confusion and slavery, you know what he sees? He connects all the dots and says, God is going to use it. God is going to move all the dots around so that you will be blessed and be brought back into Canaan. Joseph uses eyes of faith that he learned. He learned to see his life with faith. And so when he sees the future, he's not concerned. He's not concerned with pain or tribulation or slavery, because he can connect the dots. He knows that God is going to move and be faithful to his promises, be faithful to his people. And just as he was faithful in his life with all the confusion, all the pain, he will be faithful for the coming generations who will be in slavery. He will bring them out. And so I know I'm over time, but I just got to ask you, can you connect the dots in your life? I'm sure you can. I'm sure you can find all the ways that you've been mistreated. I'm sure you can find all the ways you've been unfortunate. I'm sure you can find all the ways that people have hurt you. I'm sure you can find that, because I can find it easily. But can you connect all the dots? Have you learned to view your life, to view your past with eyes of faith, that God has been working in all of it to bring you to here? That God has been working in all of it to preserve life and to come into your life and to work for wholeness. Do you realize that all along the way God has been working? That he has not forgotten you, even in your pain and in your struggles and in your feeling forgotten and your confusion. Do you realize that if we connect all the dots, God has been there. God has been blessing. God has been moving. God has been working in your life. Do you know that? Have you learned to view your life with eyes of faith? And as we look forward to the future, have we learned to connect all the dots? That no matter what comes in our life, in our families, in our church, in our community, no matter what happens, the God who's connected all the dots in the past is going to connect all the dots in the future for his glory, our joy, forever and ever. So my friends, may you learn to view your lives with eyes of faith, with eyes that see all the dots of how God is working. May God bless you with those eyes. May God bless you with eyes of faith like Joseph. May we learn to view our lives a little bit like how Joseph learned to view his life. May God give us those eyes. Let me pray for you. Father in heaven, God, we thank you for your word. God, thank you for Joseph's example. Not that Joseph was a perfect person, but God, you taught him to view his life with eyes of faith. God, help us to view our lives with eyes of faith. God, give us in this room, God, we're so weak and so prone to just view our life with human eyes. God, help us to connect the dots and see what you have been doing in our lives, see the ways you've been protecting us. God, help us. We just call out to you for your help. Jesus, would you be moving in this place, God, giving us eyes to see, and giving us hearts that trust you and love you. It's in Jesus' name we pray, amen. Hey, if you feel like maybe I was talking to you today, and man, I'm confused about my life, I'm confused about what's going on, and if I could pray for you, I'm gonna be in the back, and a lady will be in the back with me, I think Tammy maybe, and we'd love to pray with you and just talk with you. Thanks.